Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia.
Welcome to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. If you are thinking, why aren't you hearing your regular music? It is still Freedom of Species, but we did play the Pluribus theme by Dave Porter to start things off because we are discussing the show Pluribus today and animal rights themes and other issues within it. And you just heard Sally, who had a news roundup and finished with the song Everything Will Be Alright by Kate Sobrano. I think that kind of feeds fairly well into Pluribus, actually. Everything will be alright, maybe, or maybe not. Today on the show, we've got a full house. So I'm joined by previous Freedom of Species host, Adam. Welcome back, Adam.
Howdy, folks.
And Hayden.
Hi.
And Lottie.
Hello.
And, yeah, we're going to be discussing Pluribus today. Before we get into it, I just want to give a quick shout out to anyone who dropped by our stall at the 50-year 3CR event yesterday. We had some good conversations with different shows. One particular was Green Left Radio. We had some chats with them, so shout out to them. They air Friday 7 till 8:30 a.m. If anyone's up that early or catch the podcast. Anything you want to say about the stall yesterday, Lottie?
Oh, it was really fun. It was really great to speak to some listeners. That's really exciting. Potentially got some new listeners that we spoke to, and people made some really generous donations as well. So the 3CR Radiothon is still on until the end of July, and I think now we're probably less than $100 under our target.
Yep.
So, you can donate by going to 3cr.org.au. You can call in to the studio during business hours. Is that correct, Nick?
Yeah, you can do that. Yep. Yeah, and if you donate via the 3CR site or calling in or any of those ways, if you nominate Freedom of Species, it'll go towards our target specifically. And, yeah, there's also givenow.com.au/CR/Freedom of Species. I'll put a link to that in the notes as well. If you listen to the podcast version, you can donate directly there as well. But we're just about there, and thanks to everyone who's already donated.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, getting into the show, and I will say we will be giving some spoilers about the show today as well. So I guess the show is for someone who has not seen it and doesn't want to see it, or has already seen it, or is happy to see it, but doesn't mind getting spoilers. doesn't have to go in fresh.
There's someone who likes a plot synopsis before they go into a show.
Yeah. Well, I guess speaking of that, does anyone want to talk, like give listeners who haven't seen the show a little bit about the show? Anyone? Or
yeah, I mean, I can jump in. So the premise is, in the first episode, we see we're at a observatory, radio satellites or something, and they pick up a signal from space that appears to be intelligent. Eventually, they decode it, and it's like a DNA sequence, and they inject that into mice, and then by a sequence of events, the mice bites a human, and it turns out to be like a virus that infects the human. Ends up infecting pretty much the whole planet, and it creates a kind of hive mind, which I guess is the Pluribus that the show is named after. And so all these people share all their memories, all their knowledge. They all act as one and can communicate telepathically with each other. And there are only, I think, 8 humans who are like immune to it. And so the show follows one of these humans who her partner died, a bunch of people died when they were infected, and she kind of, it's just her dealing with this changed world where this hive mind is running the planet now and nothing's normal.
Yeah, I think that covers it. Anything else to add about the show?
No, I think that's a pretty good summary. I suppose a lot of it deals with this main character Carol's grief, and that she's moving through this grief. And there's a secondary character, and I watched it when it was happening. I haven't seen it since. What was the secondary character? The guy coming from
Manolo?
Manusos.
Yes, and they're also someone. These two characters are sort of pushing back against this idea of joining the Hive, which the Hive are trying to push on these last, or try to figure out for these last eight people, because being part of the Hive apparently is blissful.
Mm. Yeah, and I mean, I think the other thing about the show is it's kind of presented like a game. So the hive mind has these very clear rules that it just, no matter what, cannot violate. So it can't harm someone except to, like, make them part of the hive mind. But, like, it can't do things against their consent. So the creatures part of the hive, part of why we're talking about it, is like they won't harm animals to eat them, but they won't even harm plants. Mm. They always have to tell the truth. There's all these little rules like that, so it's kind of like Carol, the main character, and Manusos trying to kind of like navigate this situation and fix it within this set of rules that they've been given.
Yeah, and we'll maybe talk a bit more about where those rules come from and those kind of things, and we'll definitely talk a lot more about the animal rights themes in it, but maybe just as a starting off, did you like the show, starting with Lottie?
I didn't love it. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good, but I didn't love it.
Yeah. Hayden?
I think it's a strong concept, and I think at the moment for me, through the first season, the concept's what carrying it. I think something that probably a lot of people who have watched the show will note is Carol is incredibly unlikable, and it's essentially like, because the hive mind isn't really a character, it's just kind of a thing. So it's essentially, for most of it, a one-character show with the main character who's very unlikable. So I think that makes it kind of hard to watch, but the concept kind of carries it and makes it kind of enjoyable.
Yeah, and I'm a big sci-fi fan, so anything sci-fi I try to watch, and I enjoyed this. But similarly, yeah, Carol is an unpleasant character to the extreme. Although that gives them some license to do some interesting things. And some of the settings and the scenes are really quite impressive, I think, for a sci-fi show.
Yeah, I think it's a really well-made show.
Well-made show with a huge budget.
Huge budget.
Yeah, you definitely tell that. I feel a bit similar. I didn't love it. I thought it did create some interesting conversations, interesting issues to think about. And I guess one which I had a really... I couldn't really think of, but my partner made fun of me and had some better ideas. But maybe starting with Adam, what would you do in that situation if you were in Carol's situation? And
yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I think that when the show was on, I was listening to a lot of commentary about it, and mostly, to be fair, American commentary. So you can imagine it's very coloured by an American sensibility, which I think Carol's character is very American, right?
Yeah.
This individualism is hyper. Like the hyper focus of her position and her and when people discuss it, they always talk about how the hive is just this horrible thing that's taking over and going to harm Carol and has taken over people's lives for the worse because they've joined this collective. But I think that it doesn't give much perspective of what it is to be part of this collective that is perhaps protective and helpful for many, many people, right? There's a lot of people that have joined this collective that would have otherwise had horrible lives. And I think, and also a lot of people critiquing the show don't really think about what it means to be part of the collective because we can't understand it. And I think that there's this lack of imagination that a collective like that, being part of a collective entity like that, could actually be a good experience and a better experience for many people in the world. I'd be hard pressed. I think I might join. Might be an unpopular position.
What about you, Hayden?
I mean, yeah, I definitely wouldn't join. I think for me, I would probably react a little less probably extremely than Manusos, the Paraguayan man. So his whole thing is he wants to try and, I guess, find a cure or save people, so get them out of the collective. And I think for me, that would probably be the priority as well. And I think the thing is, they know how to get back into the collective. So anyone who wants to go back in could just reinfect themselves. But at this point, no one gets an opt-out. So I think for me, that would be a priority. And then also, all these people are going to starve. That's set in the stakes of the movie because the show because they won't harm animals or plants or anything. So they're going to run out of food in like 3 years or something. So I'd also be trying to work out ways to get them food, produce food, so that they wouldn't starve. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I mostly agree with Hayden. Like, I guess, Adam, like, if to me it seemed like people were genuinely part of the collective and it is just all of humanity in that collective, I would think more, like, I would be more convinced that, like, okay, this, they are telling me that this is what they want. But I think that there are so many changes in how the hive mind acts that, to me, doesn't seem like it's coming from humanity's collective desires. It seems it's coming from the virus itself that would make me think, I think this is actually like a virus and not the people in the hive mind acting under their collective free will, and therefore I would be more inclined to try and save them.
Can I counter though?
Yeah, sure.
Because I think if we think about the, like one of the things that this thought experiment gives us actually is that basically the population would collapse to a point of sustainability, right? Where they could eat the fruits off the trees and the things that sort of like a Jainist diet, right? Mm-hmm. That could sustain a human population. Right now, as humans, we have pushed past all of these ecological boundaries and have overexploited the earth to the detriment of the earth and the citizens of the earth. All types, humans, animals, and plants and others, right? So to figure out how to feed everyone, we are harming others. And we do that every day, just in our society, because we are extractively exploiting the earth around us. And maybe it's just better for a whole bunch of people to join a collective and die.
Yeah, I guess I see parallels with, like, you know, antinatalism and voluntary human extinction. I don't necessarily see human extinction as like any worse than extinction of other species, and so it would be sad, but not like maybe as sad as people who are more human supremacist would consider. But I guess I think that there's like potentially a middle ground where you can pick an apple from a tree and like wheat from the ground to feed humans. It doesn't need to be like, oh, well, we either like, you know, we either kill billions of animals every year or we starve to death within the next 4 years.
I think it
frustrates me somewhat that that's the kind almost what the show is presenting us as like the two options because I think it can then lead to like, well, if the alternative is we all starve in 4 years, then the world is fine just as it is now. And I don't agree with that. It's a false choice
equivalent.
But it'd be interesting if like, say, like, you know, 80% of them died, like in that specific case, like, is it actually a problem because they're all just one hive mind? Like, you know what I mean?
I understand in the context of humans,
it definitely would be because we are like individuals, but it's like, they're all just one. They just have just slightly less minds, I guess. But I mean, that's doesn't have much relevance to the actual world, but yeah.
You didn't say what you'd do, Nick.
Well, that's the thing. My partner Katie was more like, was less altruistic. Oh no, it was somewhat altruistic in terms of like looking after the animals and those kind of things who are already domesticated, but was also thinking about, you know, what she'd get them to bring in terms of food and where she'd go and these kind of things. And it was actually Adam who suggested this show ages ago, actually, so it's nice to cover it. But he also mentioned prestiged TV podcast, which I listened to some episodes of, and it was interesting all the different listeners of their show doing the things, and like there was all different things, like some of them were like, I'm gonna like track down these secret government documents have never been released and those kind of things, or see this amazing artistic thing, and others, quite a lot of them are more like sort of testing the pluribus. It's like, well, if they've all got this knowledge, then any person should be able to be like the best basketball player or something like that, and then like test whether like you know, but then it's like you've got the knowledge but that specific body they're in has not been trained the same, like sort of testing the pluribus, and like would this like amazing like basketball player, how would they go in American football gridiron and those kind of things as well. So there's some interesting like places people went. I did also want to mention as well on that podcast as well, they did mention that actually the creator originally thought of this idea of like what would people do if they could kind of get any wish granted. And at the time he was thinking of a male main character, and he was saying it got very porny very quickly, and that was the Mauritanian man, that guy. Yeah, exactly. Like that was kind of, and he's like, where do we, like, that is not really a show.
It's not, you know? What's the show?
That's why he chose to have a female main character.
So just for people who haven't seen a side character who's a guy from Mauritania, and he kind of uses the pluribus as a wish fulfillment because they'll do anything he asks. So he essentially, creates a living in a porn kind of lifestyle.
He has a harem, of women. Yeah. I think is the sort of the term they use.
Lives in Las Vegas in Elvis's apartment,
and drives a presidential private jet around, or doesn't drive it himself, but
pretends to be James Bond, and
All right. Well, we'll get into the animal rights themes in more depth after. We're going to play a song. This is actually from the Pluribus soundtrack. So thanks to Lottie for suggesting that. I thought this was relevant. I'm sure they played this like in the show for this reason as well. But it's Genie in a Bottle by Christina Aguilera, because I guess that is the kind of idea in terms of you can have any wish granted in this world, or for the limited humans that are left over like Carol can have any wish they want.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. On the show today, we're discussing Pluribus. We just heard the song Genie in a Bottle by Christina Aguilera. Let's start off talking about the animal rights themes. And I know we've already mentioned that a bit. Hayden in particular mentioned a few points. But anything you want to say about it, Adam, considering you're the one who passed it on, about the animal rights themes in it?
Yeah, I've got a few. And I suppose one that I think is interesting is when they're setting up this film, and you get to the first sense of an animal sort of position in episode two, I think, when they're having a dinner, they bring all the non-converted together and they have this lunch, and there's a point where they say, we don't eat animals. And what I thought was interesting...
And no zoos, all the dogs are off their chain, so this kind of thing goes beyond just eating as well.
So... I think what is interesting from the writers and the producers or the director's position is that they are trying to create this real distinction between the aliens, the virus, I think they're aliens, I call them aliens, right, and the humans. And the most alien thing you could do is to not eat animals. I think that's a really interesting commentary on our life and our reality and in the world at the moment, that the distinction that you make between aliens and humans is that aliens care about animals. But in terms of the ethics or their philosophical position, I think it's mostly sort of like a virtue ethics approach, because they will still cook animals if the
people...
Because
they want to please the humans.
They'll please the humans. They just won't commit the act themselves. So I'm not actually sure they have a necessarily strong position on animals and who animals are beyond a virtue ethics position, which is that I shouldn't do a bad thing. So I need to act virtuously, and to act virtuously means not harming others. And in fact, trying to encourage the most happiness in others as well. And then there's maybe later we can talk about some of the stuff around what it really means to liberate animals, or there's some commentary around that last episode with the young girl who is converted, and she's like holding this goat, and there's a scene where people got really sort of, you see this connection between her and the goat, and once she's converted, the whole village just Downs tool. They've been putting on this act to make her feel like she's still at home in this like rural village in Peru or something. And once she's converted, they just down tools. They all turn back to the very like not talking, not doing anything And
did she just put the goat down? She puts the goats down,
and the goat's bleating, and she walks away. And people talk about that being like, oh, they've abandoned this goat. What happens to the goat? And I actually see it a little bit differently. But yeah, I'd be interested in other people's thoughts on how animals are represented, because I'm not sure that there's a lot of representation of animals in the show beyond just their disconnect from the humans and the aliens, or their use by the humans and the disconnection from the aliens. I don't know.
It's been a long time since I've seen the show, actually, but I remember, I'm not sure if there's the same scene, different one, but like I remember when I was watching, I was like, wait a second, like why are they like confining these animals? And then they opened the gate and they all went free. Is that the same scene?
So basically it was just an act for that woman who wasn't in the pluribus yet to keep the goats contained and whatever, and then they just let them go.
I think that like an interesting, I know like me and Lottie and other Freedom of Species hosts have had quite a lot of discussions about this, of like, do they not want to kill animals, or is it just they can't? I know like they mentioned it's not in their nature, and like I think that podcast that I mentioned before, they were saying they can't kill, like it's a biological imperative. And I think that's the way Lottie kind of viewed it, I think. But I was like, someone must have decided that, right? Like what do you mean they can't? Like they physically can.
Yeah,
like I'm sure some alien or something must have decided it's not a good idea or something, right?
Whether it's an alien or not, like I think it seems to be a survival thing. Like it makes the virus less threatening. So if it's discovered before it infects everyone, if they have an imperative to not do harm, then you have less incentive as the humans who are surviving to try and kill all the infected people. You'll be like, well, they're not harming anyone. So I think it's like, my rationale for that is it's a survival tactic for the virus, because if it has that rule, it's less threatening if it's discovered. But yes, it certainly seems like they don't, like you talking about like them having like a moral rules. From what I can tell, they don't really have moral rules. They don't seem to care about animals at all, right? Yep. Like they just like let animals out of zoos, but don't do anything to like, oh, like what's a giraffe going to eat in like New York City? They're just like, well, we let it out and because we have this rule that we can't keep animals in cages. So it doesn't seem like they're doing anything to care for the animals. And in the same way, like they're happy for the humans to kill animals. And they're like, yeah, you can kill them and then we'll cook them for you. So it seems like they don't have much of a moral stance when it comes to animals, just like these rules that they can't break that they just for arbitrary reasons have to act within.
Yeah, I was quite sort of like excited by the animal rights themes when I first came into the show, because I was thinking like, oh, maybe there's like, it was a very popular show. Again, that podcast I mentioned, it was kind of a bit of a gamble for Apple because it didn't have a big movie star. It wasn't like an existing IP show or anything like that. But it was very popular, and it's kind of talking about these ideas about not eating animals and not confining them in zoos and all those kind of things. But like, yeah, when they started bringing up like, we won't pick an apple and stuff like that, I was like, that's when I was like, oh no, like, and I guess this is also like, you know, I don't know that much about the motivation of the creators, but I don't think the motivation was to promote animal rights, and that kind of makes sense. And again, from that podcast that Adam mentioned before, or that Adam promoted me and I mentioned before, but yeah, there was like a listener who wrote into that show who said, like, if humans can't protect themselves from lions with their lives on the line, what else does it extend to? Do viruses or bacteria count? If all of these other living things start killing people, could the hive mind be the end of humanity? A bit depressing that violence and animosity could be inherent to humanity and necessary for survival. And so, yeah, I just found that, like, yeah, rather than actually creating a conversation about, you know, the ethics of like eating or using or confining animals, it ended up just being like, it's supporting people's like straw man arguments against, oh, if you do this, what about this? And like, then so you end up talking about whether you should pick an apple from the tree rather than whether we should
be
like,
unethical
sort of
to like kill a virus that will kill us? Is that just as bad as like killing a cow to eat it? Yeah.
What if your lettuce feels pain, bro?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what kind of frustrated me, of like, yeah, it's sort of, it's really encouraging those straw man arguments.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah. I know you wanted to talk, Lottie, about something there, cannibalism.
Cannibalism, yeah. Shall we on Fruit of Species talk about cannibalism? So what happens in this show, it becomes apparent after a while that because the hive mind has this imperative that they can't harm animals and can't even harm plants or intervene on plant life, they're aware that they're going to starve eventually. And so they start eating dead bodies, dead human bodies, and, you know, to Carol, this is just, like, you know, horrifying and disgusting, and they kind of rationalize it as, like, well, people just are dying of natural causes every day, and so, like, this is one of the best ways that we can feed ourselves. And I guess it kind of got me thinking about, like, if humans kind of agreed culturally that it was acceptable to, like, provide your body to the earth or to people, like, would that be actually, like, ethically wrong to be eating humans?
Would it be the most vegan diet of all?
So I think safety is a big question mark. So there are, like, safety concerns when it comes to cannibalism, I think, especially, like, eating brains, from what I could tell from my online research. Eating brains in particular is dangerous. But I don't know if this is actually, like, human brains in particular or even other animal brains. Because there are safety concerns with eating other animals, like viruses live in flesh, bacteria, etc.
Yeah, I think in terms of eating human brains, that's, like, how you get the transmission of prion diseases, which are these diseases that we don't have.
Yeah.
Like, it can't be cured and they'll just kill you.
Yeah, so that's, like, obviously very, you know, that's not good. But I don't think there's enough knowledge about whether eating human bodies would be, you know, safe. So, yeah, I guess to me it's kind of like a question of, like, consent. Like, in today's day and age, it's not okay to eat human bodies because usually the person themselves and their families aren't going to consent to that because it's like, it's, you know, kind of not considered acceptable. It's not what we, But, you know, for example, like, we donate organs after our death, and that's still something that we consider, like, you know, the person and their family need to consent to that. But we consider that to be positive overall. I guess what do people think about this?
There are cultural examples of ritualistic cannibalism as well that happen, perhaps not for sustenance or to as food, but as a ritual in some event.
Well, like, particularly after someone's died. So yep. I think the main place where that's happening now is in New Guinea, and so that's a place where they have one of these prion diseases,
Kuru. I think
Kuru.
The safety concerns are not well accounted for.
But that's like their funerary practices. The family members eat, in certain tribes, eat the dead person's body as a way to have them continue living through, I think, the family, I think is the idea.
Yeah. So I don't know if, does anyone have...
I was just going to say, for background, like, they just kind of drink something, like a sort of a supplement thing.
They make it into a little protein shake.
And I think it's about 20% like human flesh, basically.
And then
mixed with other things.
So they're not just grilling human steaks.
No.
It's like a highly processed thing. Well, I'll just say, on the topic of cannibalism and its social acceptability, that I think part of our cultural attitudes towards cannibalism are kind of a colonial thing. So if you look through, like, the history of European colonialism, kind of allegations of cannibalism were one of the big rationales for why it was okay to subjugate, like, different people. And so if they went in and they were like, oh, they practice cannibalism, therefore they're barbarians and awful, and therefore it's okay for us to subjugate them because we need to civilize them. And so it kind of has become a cultural thing where we've imposed this standard that that's kind of like a non-human thing to do, be cannibalistic, and that's kind of been part of the European colonial mindset that's been enforced on the world. And there's actually a fun, like, I studied ancient history in uni, and there's a fun thing in Herodotus, which is the first history, where the Persian king calls in the Greeks and then these people from, I think, like, India or something. And he says to the Greeks, like, oh, what do you do with your dead? And they're like, we burn them. That's the rational thing to do. And he says to the Indians, he's like, what do you do with the dead? And they're like, we eat them. And then the Greeks are like, oh, that's disgusting. And the Indians are like, oh, it's disgusting that you burn them. And the Persian king's like, see, everyone just thinks the way they do it is the best. So, like, nothing's actually the best way to do things.
Yeah. And so I think, like, you know, I'm not advocating for cannibalism necessarily. I think, though, maybe we want to think about, like,
I never thought that would be a sentence. Yeah,
say
let's just do it. Advocate for cannibalism. That could be a bold statement. Yeah.
But do we want to, you know, use that thread to think about, like, what happens to our bodies after we die? And, you know, maybe it would be good for our societies to work more towards this kind of mentality and ethic where we're giving, you know, we're giving our bodies back to the earth. I'm not spiritual, but I think, like, that to me is, like, the closest to some kind of, like, meaningful afterlife, you know, kind of what I would like my, what I would like to happen to me after I die is that my body goes back to kind of feeding the earth. And so in Australia, there are some places where you can have what they call natural burials. And these are burials where the person is, like, clothed in just natural fibers. They're put in maybe like a cardboard box or just wrapped in a cloth, and they're buried in the earth. And that's a lot more environmentally friendly than being buried in a lacquered coffin, in a great, like, in a cemetery, or being cremated. And then, yeah, I came across this ABC article where people were advocating for human composting. So that's not currently like legislated, but the idea there would be that bodies go into kind of you know, like, composting machines, like our, like, home composts. It's, you know, it's kind of like an active process. And so, yeah, I just found that kind of interesting.
I know Ingrid Newkirk from PETA, her, like, will is actually to be, like, cooked on a barbecue and, like, in a public place. Yeah. And then everyone, oh, what's that smell? That smells pretty good. And it's like, oh, that's human flesh, actually, to, like, make a political statement or whatever. Yeah.
That's excellent. Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, on that topic, I guess it's one of the things, like, because they do take the pluribus to an extreme, so eating bodies is one of those things. I think partly it's, like, Adam, you talked about earlier, it sets them apart from humans, because it's something we would never do, conceivably. But I think, like, it is interesting to look at how they live differently and how it's kind of, through collective living, is more sustainable in some ways. So, for instance, like Lottie said, using the bodies in a way that actually kind of makes use of the nutrients in our bodies rather than just kind of trying to take them out of the global, like, nutrient system. And the same, like, you look at things like they no longer live in individual houses. They all kind of sleep in a big pile together just so they can share warmth and like better utilize energy and better utilize space. And I think some of these strategies they have are actually, like, beneficial things we could do to be more sustainable as humans.
Talk about degrowth and circular economy, hey?
That's a, exactly.
It's a great example of both of those things.
Yeah.
We better play another song, and then we'll perhaps perhaps talk a little bit more about Anne Wright's themes, but also get into some other issues explored in the show. The next song, this is probably a little bit of a stretch, but it's the Beaches, What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Paranoid. I thought that was kind of relevant because it didn't kill Carol, but it maybe made her paranoid, or maybe justifiably so. But anyway, here we go.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science. And scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. You just heard What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Paranoid by The Beaches, and we're discussing Pluribus on the show with Adam, Hayden, Lottie and Nick. And yeah, let's kick off the final section by talking about some other sort of themes in the Pluribus show. And I know Hayden's already touched on this already about sort of analogies for communism and capitalism. I think Adam did too. But Lottie, do you want to start off about communism and capitalism in the show?
Yeah. So when I was, well, when Hayden and I were watching it together, I was thinking like, is this Pluribus like an analogy for socialism, communism, collective living, and then Carol is kind of representing capitalism and individualism, rugged individualism, as a contrast to that. A quote from the show that kind of speaks to this is Carol speaking to the other people who are immune to the virus, and they all seem, most of them are quite happy with this new world. And so she says, some of you might think the world is better off this way with all the newfound peace, love and understanding. Enjoy that opinion. Relish it, because it may be the last one you ever possess. And when the day comes that you have peace and love forced upon you, who knows? Maybe in that last fleeting moment, you'll find you treasure your individuality. And so, yeah, again, like this show is really taking it to an extreme. So people who are advocating for communism and not thinking about the world turning into that kind of, you know, like such a extreme level of hegemony. But I think that is, there is a parallel with people who are kind of anti-communist who, you know, basically think that, like, you know, even if we got, you know, improvements to our quality of life and, you know, really high levels of literacy and education and no one goes hungry, no one's homeless. But what's the cost? If I can't, like, buy, you know, everything, anything, any brand of any particular product that I want at any given moment, or I don't get to live exactly how I want.
What's the point?
Stay up until 2 a.m. watching Golden Girls every single night.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, is that really, like, worth a changed world? And I would say yes. Like, for me, I would happily give up some, you know, personal day-to-day choices and freedoms if it meant overall the world's a much more equitable place and we're kind of, you know, living more for the greater good. But I guess people who are more pro-capitalist disagree, and I think that is a bit of a maybe a bit of a stereotypical US-American mentality. And then on that, just as I was looking up what pluribus means, I thought it was kind of interesting to find out that a pluribus unum is Latin for out of many one. And that is a motto of the USA, basically. Wow. So like
we had a linguist on the show.
Yeah, you're welcome. I guess the idea there was back in the day when all those they weren't colonies. Like what were the different states kind of referred to as?
Yeah, they were the colonies.
The colonies.
The 13
yeah,
colonies.
The 13 colonies then became one country. And so that was kind of a point of pride for the USA back then. But I think now they've really turned into a very individualistic. Mm.
The out of many one is, you could read it in a different way now.
Retaining
the individual, like, so the
yes,
yeah,
over the many,
yeah.
And I think what the show does interestingly in this contrast is that neither seems appealing, right?
Yeah.
Carol's rugged individualism is atrocious. I think most people are seeing. Well, actually, commentary online are like, "Oh, go Carol!" Yeah, which is actually, but American commentary.
I have heard that. And again, that podcast you listened to, one of them was like, "Oh, I really related to Carol." And I know. Caroline, the Freedom of Species host, was saying maybe she's judged more harshly, but I mean, this was a reference which I didn't. It was another show I hadn't seen, but was that something that you?
Was created by the same creator as Pluribus, and Breaking Bad has quite a unlikable and morally reprehensible main character. And so, yeah, you know, Caroline was saying, and the actor who played Carol, I think a lot of people have been saying that, you know, she, Walter White from Breaking Bad, was seen as kind of put on a pedestal a lot more than Carol has been, which, yeah, I think is probably true to some extent. I did think that Breaking Bad did a better job at having an unlikable protagonist because there were other more likable characters that we were rooting for alongside that. And so I think it made it a bit more palatable. And just in terms of, like, you know, my personal enjoyment of the show, I think that that kind of factored into the difference there.
But all the individuals I found. So it wasn't just Carol, but Manousos.
Yeah, exactly. And, I don't think
anyone. And the guy who was had his harem. Yeah. Like the individualism.
And Lakshmi was not really an individualist, but she was another character and she was quite unlikable.
Everyone was
I don't think any of the individuals left in Pluribus were particularly likable people. Yeah. And that's, you know, if that's a choice and you want to make a show like that, that's kind of interesting. But I do think it makes sense that people watch shows and just find it a bit frustrating when there's no one they can relate to, because we like relating to other humans.
I've seen people suggest that, so the idea of Breaking Bad was they took Walter White, who started off as kind of a good man, and then turned him bad over the series. So he went from kind of a family man to a selfish, egotistical monster. And I've seen people suggest that perhaps Pluribus is going to be Breaking Good. And they start with Carol being a very unlikable, very selfish person. And then this is kind of her arc to redeem herself and become a good person who kind of saves the world. Which would be interesting.
That would be interesting. And I think the other interesting, it's the interactions between the two sides as well, where Manousos sort of does these interrogations to break people out of the cult. Right, there's the scene where they're laying on the couch and he's just yelling at them, and they're like clearly in pain, right? And he's causing harm there, but there was a glimmer of them sort of coming out and perhaps not wanting to be part of the hive.
I forgot about that actually.
And then the other way is them just being relentlessly yes, but this is good and we will get you. We will get you, even if we have to use your genetic material that was taken a long time ago. We'll get you.
You'll come into the fold.
It's just really interesting dynamic between
the two. What's good, what's bad. And I think Carol, while being if I had to interact with her, I probably would find her unlikable. I think in some ways she's largely driven by what she thinks is best for her, but she does.
And grief.
She's grieving a lot for her partner. But, you know, she is upset when she finds out that her getting angry at the Pluribus kills a lot of them.
She's upset that she killed tens of millions of people.
So she's a good person. I
feel like she was like, I was rewatching a bit of that last night. It was kind of like, oh, I guess I'm worse than Stalin then, or something. Like, it sounded like kind of she was upset, but it was also a bit dismissive of it as well.
I think she's like, she's not a monster, but she doesn't have good interpersonal skills.
She still eats animals, so she's a bit of a monster.
Maybe, yeah.
I think in a way, like, Carol, like, she is quite real. Like, I think probably as well, maybe because we're all vegans, we would actually act morally very well in this situation. But I think, you know, like, the average person might like to think that if you're put in this situation, you'll do something heroic, when in reality, you'll probably just act within your self-interests and be very inconsistent and do what's best for you in the moment. And that tends to be how Carol acts. And she's very kind of lashing out at everyone because she doesn't have a lot of control of the situation. And I'm sure that's how lots of people would act in that situation. And it doesn't make her more likable because she's still awful even before this happens. But I think she is quite realistic in that way.
Going back to that podcast, the Prestige TV one, they mentioned it was when Carol got the hive mind to restock a whole supermarket so that she could be independent, in inverted commas. And they were saying that was peak white lady on that show. But I thought that was kind of...
I think she does a lot of peak white lady things on the show.
Well, she got them to restock the whole supermarket just so she could get some frozen meals to heat up in the microwave. Yeah.
How she got all the people who hadn't yet been converted to a conversation but only if they spoke English, right?
Yeah.
Left out the people who didn't speak English.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. Even though they could have been translated by the hive mind.
I think she justified that as like, I don't trust the hive mind to do the translation. True. But there are technologies, like there are other ways she could have still included them. And she was like, all right, let's not worry about them.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just very briefly make this point. A lot of people have made the analogy around AI, like the hive mind is an AI. And the creator of the show said he actually came up with this idea well before AI, but that he likes that interpretation and he hates AI. So, yeah, that was kind of interesting to see that angle as well. But, yeah, we are just about out of time. We'll go out with a song, but we do have any time for any final thoughts, anything else anyone wants to say before we wrap up?
There is a type of new biomanufacturing out there that's I can't remember the exact term, but it's like basically it's gaseous. So you're using gases, and there's a microbe that can take those in and grow. And it's similar to precision fermentation or cultivated meat. It's a new form of biomanufacturing, and that's a way that perhaps the hive mind could feed itself.
So what do you mean? What does the gas do?
Like, so there's microbes that can just survive, and you can grow biomass, large amounts of it, just from them being in the, like, having access to air.
And air feeds them, and they grow, and that could be a food.
Yeah, it's sort of
what sort of food? Anything?
It creates like a, think like corn. Okay. You know, the corn, the mycelium stuff, but it's not a mycelium, it's bacteria.
Oh, okay.
And so they're turning that into like chicken nuggets and things like that. There's all types. They've got yogurt from it and things that can just be turned into things. Like it's a bulk protein production.
Interesting.
And so maybe they could just grow that. And
you're trying to make yourself useful for when we get invaded by the air.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you have any thoughts on the show or this episode, you can email us fozradio@proton.me and also contact us on social media. Stay tuned for rotations coming up for some music. We will play some music now to finish up. So the final song is, where am I going? It is Dead by Mia June. And I thought it was, that one of the lyrics is, I think about you now as if you're dead. So that kind of reminded me of like the hive mind people, like Carol's partner, Helen, who was like, I thought I was still with her, but she was actually kind of dead in a way. And there was sort of big conversations about what does it mean to be alive and are they alive and all these kind of things as well. So anyway, a bit of a stretch, but I thought it was kind of relevant. Thanks for joining me, everyone.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.